mixing sports and a little bit of fun.
This is fun!
On your morning drive, this is Robbie and Rexrode. With Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode, presented by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty. On Nashville's best sports talk, 102.5 and 106.3, The Game. And on the Game Nashville app.
Ladies and gentlemen,
it's showtime.
Hour 3, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Junie Riddle, Nick Kieser here with you on this Thursday morning. And as we do every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. No Rex Road this morning. He is gallivanting around your old stomping grounds up there in East Lansing. I know they were moving in their son in college yesterday. They made it to the Peanut Barrel last night. It's just all sorts of nostalgia for Rex Road up there in East Lansing.
Yeah, good luck getting him back.
Yeah, could be a serious problem.
Yeah, I'm happy for him. I asked him to send me some pictures of some of the places that led to my 2.4 GPA at Michigan State. It was not my
still
my
gets
crowning
maybe.
Yeah, my crowning moment at Michigan State was I knew I wanted to be a journalist. Like, I literally went there for it. And I was in a 100-level journalism class. There had to be 400 kids in there. And they bring in the managing editor of the Jackson Citizen Patriot. She gets up front, and literally she goes, "Hey, guess what? I don't care what your GPA is." And you can see the professor being like, this is not
like, this is great news.
What we want someone to tell 100-level journalism students at Michigan State. She was like, "You know what I want you to do? I want you to write a million stories by the time you get out. I want you to show me your work product. I don't care how often you go to class. I don't care what your GPA is. My trajectory was like that at that moment." I was in the student newspaper like 95% of my time.
Oh,
and after I graduated, I had 10 years of nightmares where, like, literally I was having nightmares that I forgot an exam. You know, like, it's the last day of the semester and I forgot an exam, which is totally possible.
That's just absolutely amazing. Well, Charles, we got a lot to get to with you today. Let's start on the Jonathan Taylor front. So the Colts have given him permission to find a trade out there, and I guess Stephen Holder has reported that they have until Tuesday. The Colts have given him until Tuesday to get that done. Six teams have inquired at this point. So what do you make of not only the this stance by the Colts allowing him to request a trade, but what the potential interest and return could be for a Jonathan Taylor if it ends up coming to fruition?
Well, it's been going on. If people think that this is like, oh, now he's going to test them. No, his agent's been out there, like, talking to teams well before this ever happened about their potential interest. Now it's going to be on the agent to try and construct. People don't realize it really, agents do a lot of the legwork when it comes to trying to construct the best possible trade outcome that can happen here with, like, compensation. Like, when Aaron Rodgers got traded from the Jets, literally one time I remember when I was at the owners meetings, I was walking by and his agent David Dunn had, like, sheets of paper in front of himself. I don't know if he's eating lunch or whatever it was, but he was like, you could see him as you walk by. I probably wasn't supposed to be looking, but he was working out, like, trades on like trade compensation on these sheets of paper, like different scenarios, all these things. So that's part of what Taylor's representation is trying to figure out between now and Tuesday. What's he worth? I can understand the Colts saying we want a first round pick out of this guy. It's no teams really want to give up that asset. He is worth it. I do think, you know, the right teams for him understand he's worth that asset, but a lot of it's also going to have to do with the contract extension, because anywhere he goes, you're not giving up the first round pick without what the extension's ultimately going to be. When the Chiefs traded Tyreek Hill to the Dolphins, that contract was already hammered out. It's going to be the same situation here. So there is some space between now and Tuesday that goes beyond just the compensation in terms of the trade. It's let's lay down the foundation for the contract. Let's get that agreed to, and then we can get this trade done. The teams, in terms of the teams being interested, you know, the Ravens are really frustrated with their backfield position. That does not surprise me at all. I think that is a team that Taylor would be very attracted to. The Eagles, Howie Rosen's going to pick up the phone on every single possible trade. He's going to run through scenarios. You know, I think their backfield depth, obviously they spent some time already working on it, you know, this offseason, but I think they would love to be able to have one lead, you know, superstar type of guy. They feel like this is their window right now, and it makes sense. You know, the Eagles have draft capital. Howie Roseman always moving capital backwards in drafts, partially because he's like, hey, if I draft 10 guys here, our roster's so good, we like four of them might make it. You know, so why are we burning picks on guys that aren't going to make our roster? Well, you do it also because you're like, we'll burn those picks to trade for a guy who, you know, helps us get over the top and back to a Super Bowl. That's the situation. You know, the Rams, I think there's interest there. The Rams, are they really going to do this draft compensation deal again? Dolphins, Bears. Dolphins, I think, are intriguing because they have made a lot of different calls on running backs, and there was certainly the Dalvin Cook situation was checked in on. I was told straight up from the Miami organization they were never close to really what Dalvin ended up getting in New York, but they do think Taylor's in a different category than Dalvin Cook, whereas Dalvin Cook was sort of the sunsetting of what his prime will be. Taylor's a little bit of a different runner, and I think they feel like his wheelhouse is the next couple of years. So all this given, I do think the Colts will probably get a package that has that first, or there's some collection of picks that when you look at it in a larger vantage adds up to what first round value will be.
Charles, in San Francisco, it's not a huge surprise that Sam Darnold has been named the number two quarterback, but as you look at Trey Lance and obviously the draft capital that San Francisco gave up to go get that pick originally and how everything has played out since then, what do you think the future now looks like for Trey Lance in this league as everybody tries to figure out what's next for him?
It's tough. It's really tough now when you move on to a second team at this stage. I know I've talked in the past about him needing a fresh start. It's not that easy. He's going to go to his next team at a very paltry, you know, draft compensation price. He might not even, it might get to a point where they just cut him because, you know, teams, do they want to be on the hook for the number three overall pick contract, which is guaranteed money? And the Niners have been listening to offers on this guy the entire offseason, and nothing ever really materialized. The Vikings, there was definitely interest there, I think, at one point. Now I think the Vikings, having been through their entire – that's the thing, too. People should listen to this part. The Vikings, having been through their entire offseason passing program, what they consider valuable classroom time, giving him reps in their offense and sort of tearing him down and rebuilding him, you've missed a pretty significant window. And remember, the Vikings are looking at potentially having to replace Kirk Cousins after one more year. You wanted to kind of have that candidate, if it was a Trey Lance type, you wanted to have that candidate in-house back in, you know, March, and it ultimately didn't happen. So, I think with Lance, when I talked to a couple different evaluators, including one that was really knows the situation well and in San Francisco and sort of where this went, he was like, hey, he's got to have a fresh start. He needs to have a quarterback in front of him who's going to be pretty generous in terms of being able to, you know, help him learn and teach him. And he's going to have to find some reps somewhere, however you do that. And, you know, another evaluator said to me, like, hey, what if he played like elsewhere? What if he didn't play in the NFL? What if there was another league? What if it's the CFL or wherever else? There's a way to find Trey Lance some reps. That's really the kind of reps he needs, not just off-season type of work. What this all comes down to, though, fans, when they look at quarterbacks and they think about evaluating, look at the number of passes. Think about all the ceiling for Trey Lance. The guy threw less than 100 passes in high school. I don't think people realize that he threw less than 100 passes in high school. He threw like 300-some passes in college, he's in that range, and then he threw – whatever the total was in the NFL, you're talking about guys like less than 500 real game reps at quarterback throwing the football. I don't know that you can really ever draft a guy like that at that position ever again after this crash.
We'll have more with Charles Robinson with Yahoo Sports coming up next. Take your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025 on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. We got more with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports now here on Robbie and Rex Road.
Charles, we've seen a lot of first-team offenses and specifically quarterbacks playing a lot more in this preseason than in years past. Are you a proponent of this and think that it will actually help? And why do you think this trend has kind of been happening all of a sudden this season?
I think some of the situations you got to look at it. Rodgers plays for the first time or slated to play for the first time in, since 2018. I think that has to do situationally with just the fact that it's a new situation with the Jets. There's some chemistry stuff there. I think in practice they've probably seen some things that irritate him a little bit. And I think that Rodgers supports it. You know, I think there's been some frustration. The joint practice with Carolina, I think there were things he was kind of pissed off about, smoothing some things out. Feels like there needs to be a little more of a real-world look at some of it. Russell Wilson situation in Denver, I think they just have significant offensive line problems, and they're trying to sort that out. And by the way, I do think offensive line has a lot to do with this. It sounds counterintuitive, where you'd be like, why would you want to take a veteran quarterback and trot them out there behind an offensive line that you're worried about? Well, they've got to have a real feel, sort of a real understanding of, and maybe a real snapshot of what's going to happen consistently in games that's going to inform you, okay, how many packages do we need to run now with, max protect two tight ends? Which tight end can we count on, or how many tight ends on the depth chart can we count on in terms of blocking guys? How many are combo tight ends that we can count on blocking, catching? This offensive line issue with the lack of development is driving teams crazy right now. And that was the one common theme when I went through training camps. Everybody's complaining about our offensive line looks terrible. We're having problems when we draft guys into the league. They are not even close to being ready products, many of them, unless it's coming out of the SEC or the Big Ten. Too many guys have a curve that is taking too long. And it was funny. I had one GM said to me, he's like, man, he's so jealous of the Eagles. He said, the Eagles and Jeff Stoutland are like a factory for refining offensive linemen at this level. He's like, they're so good at developing these guys. And then they have this choice of either keeping them or sending them on. And having adequate offensive linemen are going to show up when the regular season starts takes away your need in the preseason to go, how's our quarterback going to react? Our starter going to react in a live situation to having to make line calls with people who are making mistakes or not having a real feel for, is this guy going to work at guard or tackle? And, can he block, in a way that our starting quarterback's happy with? Like, there's definitely a rhythm between quarterbacks and offensive lines. I really think that has as much to do with it as anything else, because when you look at passing, all the rhythm that comes in throwing the football, they get more reps now in the offseason if everybody shows up. And then they do so much private stuff with players now. It's not – I think passing rhythm is less of an issue. It's, okay, does the offensive line understand the timing of this quarterback's drops? We've made changes here. We're running different combinations and different looks. Titans fans kind of familiar with this, right? Like trying to sort all this out. Think about the Jets. I mean, the Jets, when I went through the Jets, they're like, literally, I'm talking to somebody in the leadership, portion there, and they're like, we're very happy in terms of our interior offensive line. We just got to figure out the tackles. I'm like, man, it's late August. Okay, like, I hear you, but, geez, this is a little scary. Obviously, Mekhi Becton, there's, Dwayne Brown, there's other things that factor into that, but people are like, well, why is Rodgers going to start this game? Why risk it? Because Rodgers is literally looking at the general manager, Joe Douglas, and he's looking at Robert Saleh, and he's saying, hey, I need to know who my five are. Who are my five in front of me? Tell me who the five are. Let's get in a real-world situation so I know which ones I can count on, and then we can try to figure out, what progress we can make in this limited snapshot at this point. But that's why Rodgers is starting. People want to know that question or want to know that answer. That's it right there. He's got to know his five, and I think more teams are leaning into that. It's why the Broncos have started Russ the way they have. It's just, you got to figure it out, or these guys are going to get killed once the regular season starts because they're not even really fully familiar with the offensive line group in front of them.
Now, speaking of quarterbacks playing in the preseason, I feel like there's two second-year quarterbacks that have been making a lot of headway this preseason thus far, in Kenny Pickett with the Steelers and Sam Howell with the Commanders. Are you buying any of this hype with these two guys coming in with the way they're performing in the preseason? Do you think that's going to carry over?
So I didn't see Howell in person. I did see Pickett, and yeah, I mean, Pickett looks really, really good. I mean, really smooth, confident from everything I could see. You know, George Pickens, amazing talent that he looks for. They have a vibe. I think what George needed and what the wide receiver group really needed from talking to people in the organization, Allen Robinson showing up has been a great thing for them, because for lack of a better term, they kind of needed an adult in the room, somebody to sort of be like, okay, great, we have all this, you know, this talent here. We've got to continue to find this. You got to show up and play in practice. And prior to my Rams experience, everybody was always happy with what I brought to the field. And the Rams were too. I just think it was ended up being a poor fit and a lot of, you know, injuries that scuttled the Allen Robinson, you know, project in L.A. But I think that is one of the reasons why I look at Freiermuth, by the way, Pat Freiermuth, having a tight end who is going to be, I think, a staple, you know, 850-yard receiver guy, you know, and I'm talking about basement, 850 yards receiving, you know, 8 touchdowns, just a really consistent down the sort of hashes tight end that is great for Pickett. So to me, having seen that, I'm a big believer in that. Howell, I'll be honest with you, I was surprised just sort of what I've seen in terms of him playing. You know, that's all I've really seen is the preseason play. And but he looks really confident. He looks really comfortable. And when I look at second-year guys, I don't get out on the field and have a chance to go in and ask the coaches and the you know, front office about what's going on. I'm just kind of like, all right, when I'm watching them, how comfortable do they look? When I went through Tennessee, that was one of the things with Malik Willis where I'm like, wow, like he looks a lot more comfortable now out there when I watch him play, you know, when he's taking snaps in practice. And then when I watch, you know, him play in a game, you're just like, the comfort level, that was the big step forward. So I think, you know, Howell and Pickett both have that. Howell, hopefully, you know, you don't want to lose Terry McLaurin for a significant period of time, you know, but he has weapons there. I think Jahan Dotson's going to take a pretty nice little jump this year. So, yeah, I like both of those guys. The one I laid my eyes on, though, I'm very confident that I think Pickett can have a solid step forward. I don't know if he explodes in year two, but I do think he's got everything he needs to take a big step forward.
So, Charles, I know that kicking, not always the sexiest topic, but it's a big topic around here this week in terms of Titans trying to find a kicker. So, in 2019, Ryan Succop gets hurt, and he has a bad year. They try to bring him back too quick, and he wasn't good. At least him, he goes on to Tampa and kicks there for the last 3 years. And the Titans have basically been trying to find a kicker ever since then. They had Guskowski for a year. They had Randy Bullock that's come in and did okay. But it feels like they've gone through about 10 or 11 kickers since then, and they've cut two more this week. Michael Badgley's now in here. I'm just curious, from your vantage point around the league, how much of a priority do you feel like kicking is with coaches, with front offices? Because it's not the first thing we talk about, obviously, but at the end of the day, I mean, it could end up being the difference in whether or not you win a division this year if you're the Titans.
And that's why what you just said right there, I think some of that plays into what's going on. And so, like, it's, and by the way, beyond Tennessee, this is like when you get a, you know, elite level kicker, pay him $3 million, $4 million, whatever, just lock them down. You know, you've got them. And then if they go through some bumps, you know, oh, let's say like Mason Crosby during the course of his career with Green Bay, you work through it and figure out a way to retain that person and get them over the hump. But as you said, I think some of it is you're getting younger kickers in the league and who now come in, and the NFL is so pressurized year to year now. Like, it's more of a year to year league than I think it's ever been in terms of like me looking at a team and saying, hey, they had X success last year. That feels like there's this carryover. I can tangibly say to myself, I know they're going to be successful this year. It's a lot. It does not happen as much as I feel like it did, you know, maybe in the first 10 years of my career than the last 10 years. I think more of it has to do with who your quarterback is. Like if you've got Mahomes, you know, and you're reasonably the roster around him from one year to the next is the same, you're going to have that success. But most teams are in this sort of pressurized one year to the next situation, and that creates situations with kickers who can win and lose games for you, 2-3 game swing based on, you know, how good your kicker is and reliable they are. That's the difference between whether you're on the hot seat going into off season or you're getting a little extra patience from management. But when I look around the league, you know, I talk to people in Cleveland and it's like, geez, Cade York spent this, you know, spent a 4th round pick on this guy, really thought he was going to be reliable. And they're thinking about like, what do we do here? Can we work through these struggles with him? We can't afford to have a kicker in a year like this in a division like the AFC North, which is going to be a total dogfight. You know, we can't afford to have, of all places, a potential problem kicker. You, the Packers, Anders Carlson, you hear Brian Gutekunst, the GM's like, hey, one thing Ted Thompson, the former GM, taught Brian, when you have a good kicker you believe in, you just got to work through it. Give them a leash, try to get through the problems and hope that they come through on the other side and then give you a long run of consistency. And if you don't, what happens is what you just said, you lose Suckup and you go into a situation where you're bringing back in, you know, Badgley. And like Badgley's career is a great example of teams that liked him, brought him in, and then when he started to have issues, weren't willing to, you know, spend the time to work through it. Think about this, like Colts, right? Starts with the Colts.
Yep.
Gets a solid period with the Chargers, 2018 to 2020. But then you're like Titans, Colts again, Bears, Lions, Commanders, Titans again. Like, you know, it's if you believe in the talent, and I thought Detroit was sort of in this place with him where they're like, he's got talent, he's got a leg, we're just going to have to stick with him and work through it until we know he's on the other side of it. But what happened? Detroit got into a position, you know, this year where they're like, wait a minute. No. We're competing for the NFC North now. We have a chance to do something special. If we lose 2 games because of this guy, we could miss the playoffs. And so when you go into the offseason, you're like, he's not ultimately going to be a piece for us. So I don't know how to resolve it. I wish I could tell you. I don't know. Because it's not like these guys don't get a ton of work. I mean, spend entire practices, you know, working on everything mechanically. I don't get it. It's not like the offensive line problem. Where it's just like, hey, they're not doing things that are replicatable at one level to next. That's the issue with offensive linemen and college and the pros. Guys are doing what they're supposed to be doing. Jake Moody's doing what he's supposed to be doing at Michigan. And then, you know, when he comes ultimately into the NFL, so you expect that to be replicated. So I'm lost. I don't know where to fix it. I wish I could. I wish I could kick, by the way. It would be, you'd have like a 20-year NFL career.
Not allowed to get hit. It's awesome.
It's amazing. Absolutely. And you can make some good money, too, by the way, if you're consistent.
That's right. Charles, awesome stuff as always, man. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning, and we'll chat with you next week.
I appreciate it. Thanks, fellas. Have a good one.
Absolutely. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest on Robbie and Rex Show. We'll take your reaction to Charles. Lots to react to there on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025, our phone number. We'll do that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.